Welcome to the Kona Edge, where you'll discover what the best triathletes in the world do to give them the edge.
Welcome onto this edition of the Kona Edge. If you're listening to the day that we publish it, it is Wednesday, and it is the last day of May, the 31st of May, and it's a pretty big day here in South Africa as far as endurance sports goes. Because if you've listened to this podcast for any stretch of time, you would have heard me talking at length to quite a few of our guests about an ultra marathon called the Comrades Marathon. And it is the largest ultra marathon in the world, biggest field. I think once again this year, close on 18,000 entries. They'll probably get 14 or 15,000 people on the start line, which is massive. It's 56 miles, 86 kilometers. And it is brutal. You've got 12 hours from start to finish. It's gun to gun, so none of this mat to mat nonsense. You have to finish within the time, and it's pretty tough. You climb some mountains, let me tell you. It is a very, very brutal race, but an incredible experience. And a race that's played a big part in my sort of athletic endeavors, and probably one of the races that got me, or if not the race that got me into eventually into this water triathlon. So it's happening this coming Sunday, the 4th of June. And if you're running, I know we've got quite a few people who listen to the Comrade stuff we do on a podcast and have sort of spilled over onto this podcast. So best of luck. I hope you have a great run. It's the first time in 8 years I'm not going to be in Durban for the race. So I'm suffering with a big case of FOMO, I can tell you that much, but I'll be tracking it. Got lots of friends running once again this year, and I'll be watching it. One of the cool things here in South Africa is our national broadcaster shows it from start to finish on television. So I'll be glued to my TV. I've got no doubt I'll be on the couch bright and early, and I'll be there till the final gun goes at 5:30 on Sunday afternoon as well. It's pretty special. If you don't know much about Comrades, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pop two video clips in the show notes to this episode of the Kona Edge. Just head over to the website and check them out, because it is well worth the watch. The one is probably my favorite clip about Comrades. There's lots of them, but this one is my favorite. I think it embodies pretty much everything the race is about, what I love about it. And then the second clip is just a little 5-minute that I put together back in 2010 about my journey and how I got into running the Comrades. And yeah, it's a pretty cool story too, if I say so myself. And we've had some great feedback on that video. It's been viewed a good few thousand times, and yeah, every year lots of emails come through in the build up to Comrades, because people use it for sort of motivation and inspiration to get them through race day. So I've put both those videos in the show notes to this episode. And speaking of this episode, we head to the States to catch up with our guest today, and a pretty cool story. We'll be chatting to James Burke, who is from Wisconsin, and he's got a pretty cool Ironman background as well. He's a racing snake, I can tell you that much, with a PB of sub 9 hours for an Ironman. Yep, sub 9. And he raced a 9:04 in Kona last year for a podium spot. So he's no slouch, and he's got a pretty cool story to share, and that's coming up next. It's time for the Coach's Corner, and today's coach in the spotlight is Lindsay Parry, with a passion for high-performance sport. Lindsay's one of South Africa's most widely recognized coaches, the high-performance coach for Triathlon South Africa for many years, leading the team to the London and Rio Olympic Games, where Team South Africa won the bronze in 2016. Lindsay has coached both triathletes and runners onto podiums of some of the world's most illustrious races, including the silver medal at the Edinburgh Commonwealth Games and the past two ladies winners of the Comrades Marathon in South Africa. Lindsay has a unique ability to understand what it takes to succeed at any level, and thrives on coaching, motivating and inspiring others to do the same. Lindsay's one-on-one coaching services are massively in demand, and if you'd like to find out more about Coach Parry, the website to get to is coachparry.com, or you can get over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. All the details are there. If you're a coach and you'd like to get featured here in the Coach's Corner, all you have to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching, scroll down to the bottom of the page, the details are there. It's a great pleasure to welcome James Burke onto the podcast. James, welcome onto the Kona Edge.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
James, I'm super excited to chat about your sort of triathlon career and some of your achievements, because you've had a couple of biggies. You raced on the Big Island in 2016 and got a podium, finishing fourth, I think. The sport of triathlon, have you been around it long? I mean, where did your journey into the sport start?
Yeah, I actually only got really into triathlon probably 5 years ago. And prior to that, I was a swimmer and a runner growing up. And after university, I took some time off and started a family. And 5 years ago, stumbled upon an Ironman race here in Wisconsin at the Ironman Wisconsin, and fell in love with it and decided I needed to try it, and so signed up. And then the next year I did it, and I've been hooked ever since.
What was that, your first sort of experience in triathlon, was signing up for an Ironman?
Yeah, well, I had done some shorter distance races growing up when I was still in grade school. But yeah, for all intents and purposes, I had taken probably almost 10 years off from when I stopped swimming collegiately at university to doing my first Ironman. So I had to learn how to train all over again.
That's incredible. What was it that sort of drew you in and got you fired up again?
I tell you, I think I was missing a competitive aspect of my life. And growing up in sports, I had always, you know, been competitive, and I'm from a family of, I have, three brothers and a sister. So a large family where we were all competitive amongst each other. And I think I missed that. And then, you know, I had always had it in the back of my mind that Ironman was this crazy event that I just needed to see if I could do one day. And timing was never perfect. And, you know, quite honestly, it usually never is, but went and watched the race and got super inspired and decided to register and I got and went from there.
I guess that's one of the cool things about triathlon as well, is that competitiveness amongst the age groups and with the age group, that sort of scene. I mean, there are many sports, and I think maybe marathon running around Boston Marathon, you do have that to an extent, but triathlon's truly unique in that sense, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, for me personally, it's changed in the 5 years since I've been doing the sport, where, you know, when I started, I wasn't really competitive, or I didn't at least view my competitors as my competitors. It was more internal of, can I do this event, and what's it going to be like when I'm doing a marathon after a 112 mile bike, and, you know, kind of a lot of the same thoughts that most Ironmen and women have. And then as you get to do it more and more, you get to learn, you know, who are the competitive people in your age group, and yeah, it's fun. And as I learn and meet others, you realize that, you know, it's not just the 20 to 25 year olds who are competitive. It's the 50 to 55 year olds that are just as competitive and looking at age group start lists and et cetera. So it's really neat to be around.
Yeah. The crazy thing is the old age groups are probably more competitive than the sort of 20 to 25s or the 25 to 30s. It's almost people get to a stage in their life where they might have a bit more resources. So they've made some money in their life, and they've got a bit of not necessarily spare time, but they can afford to take some time off work. They're not necessarily building a career. And I find a lot of people only coming into the sport at that stage, and they come from pretty competitive sporting backgrounds. And that's when it really starts hotting up in the age group ranks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. You look at, you know, even in Kona, some of the most competitive age groups are, you know, 40 plus. And, you know, I'm getting close to that. So I hope that I'm going to be able to, you know, bang heads with those guys as well.
I always joke, I'm going to outlive everyone in my age group, and that's my Kona strategy. But the way we're going, I'm going to have to live until I'm 90, I'm afraid, because there's some incredible, incredible guys just racing on that big island. But let's take a step back, and you talk about growing up in a house with a good few siblings. It must have been interesting times. Where do you fit in? I mean, are you youngest, in the middle, eldest? How does it work in your family?
Yeah, so I'm the fourth of five. So my sister's the oldest, and then there's four boys, and we grew up very loving family. We still spend a lot of time together. In fact, I have a brother and a sister that live here in town, and then the other two are in Seattle, Wisconsin, or Washington. So we get out there quite regularly to visit them. But you know, we were the group that was rambunctious, and my parents made a decision very early on that to burn off some energy, all the kids are going to do sports, and we got to choose what we did. But you know, the reality is when you're the fourth in line, you're kind of following your brothers and sisters. So pretty much everyone was a swimmer and a runner of some form, and then you know, there were other sports that were kind of mixed in there. But yeah, it was fun growing up, and it still is fun. And now that we're all getting older and married, having kids, then, you know, we're kind of passing it to the next generation.
You've obviously, the genes must be good because you don't get to do Ironman times the way you do them if you don't have good genes. Obviously, there's a lot of work that goes into it. Were you the only one who was blessed with ability, or are your siblings pretty decent in whatever sphere they got into as well?
No, I would say they're all talented in one sport or another. They're all not crazy enough to do Ironman like I am, but they all come and cheer when we do go to races together. But youngest brother was an outstanding runner. Older brother was a really good hockey player, and then older brother and sister were both good runners and swimmers. So we all did similar sports, and we all had somewhat success.
James, as far as coming into the sport of triathlon with a swimming and running background, and particularly a competitive one, I don't want to say it's an advantage because I think everyone comes with their own skill sets and takes benefit out of it, but it is a big plus coming from those two sports into the sport of triathlon.
Yeah, I think so. And I think really to have a swim background is nice from my perspective in that I don't have to spend as much time in a pool trying to learn technique and things like that. So I'm able to focus more of my training sessions around biking and running, whereas I'm not trying to learn to swim. So I do think it's an advantage. And then, certainly the aerobic capacity that you build through years and years of age group swimming and running certainly helps as well.
As far as what you think your secret weapon is when it comes to triathlon, what do you think your unfair advantage is?
I used to say it was the swim, but I think the reality is if I look at least my splits compared to my other competitors and the people that I compete and train against, I think probably my secret is that I'm very consistent across all three disciplines. I've spent a lot of time learning how to bike and becoming a better biker, and by no sense am I a great biker, but I'm proficient enough that I can kind of hold my own. And the running gets a little harder as I get older because I get little niggles and injuries. But so I would say that I'm fairly consistent across all three. And the nice thing about being a decent swimmer is, you get out early, and so you don't have the congestion that a lot of the other races do with, kind of middle of the pack swimmers, where then the bike is a little more stressful because you're dealing with, drafts and packs and trying to get around people.
You've had a couple of incredible performances, and I'm looking, as you're speaking, I'm looking at your Kona 2016 results, a 904.49 overall. I mean, you've literally 4 minutes away from the top spot on that podium, and over the length of an Ironman, 4 minutes is absolutely nothing. So, I mean, that's a great performance. Would you rate that up there as some of your best? What would you say personally is the highlight of your triathlon career so far?
Yeah, it's hard for me to compare the first one, not that because it was my best race or my fastest time, but just the experience and the unknown and the accomplishment, a sense of accomplishment to complete it. So Ironman Wisconsin in 2013 was certainly special, but I went to Kona in 2014 and then returned in 2016. And both of those races were pretty consistent. In fact, my time was only a couple minutes faster, I think, the second time in 2016. But I was, specific to 2016 Kona. I was very pleased with my swim and my bike. I biked more aggressive than I had in the past, and so that was encouraging. And my run was okay, but at the end of the day, the run at the end of a marathon and then throw in the Kona heat.
James, as far as getting better over time, I mean, that's one thing that I've picked up quite a bit here on the Kona Edge is consistency is king. It doesn't matter what you do, as long as you do it consistently, I think is the most important factor. And getting better over time comes with that consistency. Having two Kona performances so close together, were you disappointed? You mentioned the you probably would have preferred a better run. Your bike was great, but were you disappointed you didn't go much faster in 2016 than you did in 2014?
I think with the conditions that led up to 2016, the easy answer would be to say, yeah, I was disappointed. But the reality was that was the best I had on the day. I had some running injuries earlier in the year that kind of limited my run training. So I knew going into Kona, I was a little probably undertrained on the run. But the reality is that that race and that island and the conditions make it unlike anything else. And probably my best race was Ironman Louisville the year before, certainly from a time perspective. But the reality is that you really can't control the time so much as the conditions and racing the competition, because you know a windy day on Kona versus I think it's always windy on Kona, but you know, the wind can make such a big difference. So I try not to get too hung up on time. Certainly would have liked to have broken nine, but you know, you can only do what you can do on the day. So I walked away pleased. I was happy.
You mentioned that, and I asked you your sort of the highlight and your best performance, and you said the one that sticks out was the first Ironman, but you sort of just in passing mentioned Louisville, and that was very fast. An 8:48, I think it was, just shy of 8:49, a win in Louisville. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that was neat. It was a neat race. So the 8:48. I'll give a little bit of asterisk just because it's a downriver swim. So the swim was really fast, but,
take it.
Yeah, absolutely. I was pleased. I really wanted to race well. And I that was a great race. In fact, it was the best run that I've ever had and, most enjoyable race. And, you know, to cross the finish line, I never really went into it thinking that, you know, I could have won. Now, some age grouper had to win because there was a no pro race, but to cross the finish line first was really neat, and it was a bit surreal, and so that's a memory I'll have for a long time for sure.
It must be a pretty cool experience. You talk about a non-pro race, only age groupers, and as an age grouper, you could win your age group at a race where there are pros, and you don't get that experience of crossing the finish line first. That must be pretty special.
Yeah, I think it's neat, and I think it's a dynamic that's changed over time, because obviously before there was always a pro contingent, but to have races that are non-pro, I know there was some concern about, is it going to take away some of the cachet of that particular race? But the reality is the majority of people that are doing this are not doing it because pros are doing it. They're doing it because of a personal accomplishment that they're pursuing or other reasons. And to have an age grouper in the real, and you know, at the end of the day, the pointy end of the age group to go pro, all you have to do is win a race. And so, the mix between, kind of the mid-level pros and the top age groupers is that line's pretty blurred. And so, you know, you got some fast guys that are going, pretty quick that could easily turn pro in a future time.
I mean, 8:48, I can't wrap my head around that. But then you look at this past weekend at the Ironman South American Championships, Tim Don breaking the world record, a 7:40. I mean, that's an hour quicker, more than an hour quicker than you did in Louisville. I mean, for me, I can't even think about that. But for you, I mean, that's crazy fast.
Yeah. I mean, and it's all a matter of perspective, right? I mean, there's people that would look at an 8:48 and say, oh, that's unbelievable. But then when you do an 8:48, you look at, you know, Tim Don, who does a 7:40, and you say, okay, that's unbelievable. So certainly it's a vantage point and a matter of perspective, but the reality is that, you know, there's the times are only getting quicker, and the trainings, you know, people are becoming so specialized, and just the level of talent is just unbelievable, and it's just getting deeper and deeper, it seems.
And I mean, if you look at the sort of athletes that are coming through from the ITU sort of ranks, if you think of the Brownlees and Javier Gomez, who have now started sort of dipping their toes in 70.3s, and we've seen what's happened early part of the season so far this year as well. You talk about those times going faster. How much faster do you think the sort of top guys can go?
That's a great question. I certainly think that we will see 7:35 get broken. And that, I think that's the time that Frodeno did in Challenge Roth. How much faster? I don't know, but I could easily see another 10 minutes, perhaps. It's hard to fathom how much faster, just because, you know, you look at the times that they're doing and they're running, you know, low 240s, and you know, how much faster can you get off of that? Plus put a bike and a swim in front of it. But, as a fan, I'm ecstatic, and I'm really excited to see what's going to happen over the next few years.
Yeah, I know there's been lots of talk as well over the last day or so as we're recording this with regards to the distances and sort of getting that right. That is obviously a concern as well, and it's one thing calling a time an Ironman world record, but yeah, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things you need to look at that. And like you said, with Louisville, it's a downriver swim, so you can never really get the conditions exactly the same on every single course. But at the end of the day, it is what it is, and 740 is still absolutely incredible. James, let's talk about life around triathlon. And you mentioned you've got a family yourself and sort of balancing training and what you need to do to race at the top level as an age grouper and sort of keeping the lights on at home and keeping things ticking the way they should be ticking over. How do you get that balance right?
So I would say it's a journey. I've certainly changed, you know, my training and the time commitment that I have to contribute to training for triathlon as my family's grown. So I'm married and have three children, and they're all young, all under the age of 8. But as they get older, they get more active and they get more involved in sports and extracurricular activities. And so I would say it's constantly a balance. I'm very time efficient. And so I have an idea of what I want to accomplish throughout the course of the week from a training perspective. And then there's a lot of changes and alterations made to my schedule based on time and when I can fit maybe a run in here or a swim in there. So
I've never had anybody use the term time efficient on the podcast before. Tell me more about being time efficient and what that means.
Yeah. So this is something I've learned over the last 2 years. So my, our daughter was born, she'll be 2 on July 3rd. And so when she came along, I was doing that, I would say probably 90% of my bike rides outside. And I invested at that time in an indoor trainer, and with the software that's come along with indoor training is just incredible. And so I would say I've flipped that from about 90% outdoor to 90% indoor, which allows me to ride early in the morning and late at night when it might not be light out. And I can get up, get out of the bed and get on the trainer in 10 minutes. Whereas, you know, getting all kitted up and geared up might take me 20. And so that's what I talk about from a time efficiency perspective is sneaking in workouts as quickly as possible. I always have a gym bag in my car and a swim bag in my car. If I have a 45-minute window where I can get a workout in.
I think it's important also, as much as you've got what you want to do in the week, you need to be flexible. Like you say, you've got the gym bag in the car, and if something does sort of open up, you've got to be able to take advantage of that opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's probably the best perspective that I have on the sport, is that at the end of the day, I'm doing this because I love it and I enjoy it, not because it's my job or my career. And so I used to get very worked up, probably like a lot of people, about missing workouts and not having time, or working late one day and not being able to get in a run or a bike. And I've found to embrace the changes throughout the course of a day. And so I, like I said, I have a rough idea of what I want to accomplish throughout the course of the week, but then I'm very flexible as to when it gets done, which probably isn't the ideal training setting, but it's the reality that I live in based on, you know, balancing a career and a family.
Let's talk career. What do you do for a living?
So I'm a sales manager at a multi-industrial construction and service company.
Difficult to sort of manage that and the training and the family on top. I mean, is it a pretty high demanding job?
Yeah, it's definitely a full-time career with travel now mixed in, which adds another dimension to trying to get in workouts. And so you have to be all the more smarter. But, you know, my employer has been great. I've been with the company for 15 years. And so I have a good setup in a good environment to kind of be able to balance everything.
And it's incredible. I know, I mean, my brother's an Ironman and he's corporate boy, and they hire a lot of people. And often he'll say that someone who comes from an Ironman sort of background or an ultramarathon background, it says a lot about their character and the discipline it takes to do one of those things. So as much as it does take a lot of time, I think employers it could be a lot worse. You could have a gambling problem, I guess.
Yeah. I tell everyone I wish I liked golf more. I'd probably be golfing more than I'd be doing Ironman. But I think it's at the end of the day, it's a hobby, and everyone has hobbies, and everyone's hobby is unique to that individual. But I like it because it's my stress reliever. And so if I have a tough day at work or a stressful day at work, then there's nothing better, in my opinion, than going out for a run and kind of clearing my head. And so I think it all works, at least for me, where I think it makes me a better parent and husband, and probably makes me a better employee. And at the end of the day, as long as I can kind of manage and balance everything, then it works.
As far as what you're working on now, what's your biggest struggle when it comes to triathlon? What are you trying to improve or get better at?
I think I still can improve on the bike. So I've put probably an emphasis around that. And then I would tell you that the biggest thing I'm focused on is staying healthy with the run. I've had some lower leg injuries, probably overuse injuries. And so being more diligent about foam rolling and stretching, and my wife is begging me to try yoga, and so I might try that in the future. So I think increasing flexibility so that I can stay healthy is going to be important as I continue on.
What's been the biggest lesson that Ironman has taught you?
The biggest lesson I would say is perseverance. There's been a lot of times where I've questioned whether or not I wanted to keep doing it, or been in races and questioned whether or not I wanted to continue doing it, as I'm sure a lot of your listeners can equate to. And the sense of accomplishment that at least I feel when I complete one, kind of keeps me coming back. And when I entered Ironman Wisconsin back in 2013, I thought it was going to be a check the box and say that I did it, and maybe even get the tattoo and move on. And I've been surprised at how big of an integral part of my life, and quite honestly, my family's life, and embracing the sport and the lifestyle has been important. And it's really helped me that I've had a wife that's very supportive and allowed, for us to be on this journey together.
Yeah, absolutely. As far as that first one, and that was going to be my next question, I'm glad you brought it back to that. If you could go back and talk to James Burke back then in the build-up to your first Ironman, knowing what you know now, what would you tell yourself? Is there anything you'd do differently?
I'd tell him to slow down on the bike.
I want to hear that story.
So it was one of those races where it was the pros went off, I think, 10 minutes before the amateurs, and it was a mass start. And because I was a pretty strong swimmer, I got out and I ended up catching several pros and passing them and then watching them at about mile 80 pass me as I was going backwards. And I'll never forget the feeling of complete despair as I got off the bike and started thinking about how I had 26 miles to run and I wasn't going to be able to finish. And so I learned some valuable lessons, and it wasn't because I didn't study, because I had read as many books and listened to as many podcasts about how to pace right. And I think the gun went off and I got too competitive and kind of threw that out the door.
It's probably a blessing in disguise. You learned that early on.
Yeah. And I also learned that, I'll never forget it. The Coca-Cola that they serve on the course, as I was starting the run, I was thinking that I can't believe people actually drink that. And I think by like mile five, I was chugging it at each aid station, and it was like heaven on earth.
It's amazing.
So the things you learn.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing. You think of things like that. We've got a spread that you put on sandwiches here, and the Australians know what I'm talking about. It's in Australia. It's called Vegemite. We call it Marmite, and I think the Brits call it Marmite as well. And if you had to hold a gun to my head and say at any time of the year, eat a Marmite sandwich, I'd tell you to pull the trigger, because there's no ways I'm eating it. But it is the best thing during an Ironman run that I've ever eaten in my life. So I know exactly what you're talking about. James, what's left for you to achieve? What are some of the sort of long-term goals and aspirations, not just in Ironman, but on the Big Island too? You talk about, you mentioned to me before we started recording that you've got a plan in place and hopefully you head back there next year. But what do you want to achieve in the sport?
Yeah, I would love to go to Ironman and 70.3 Worlds in Chattanooga this year and have a good showing and maybe get on the podium there. That's probably my near-term goal, and then certainly Ironman Florida this year to hopefully get back to Kona the following year in 2018. It's hard for me to say that I want to be, I want to win my age group or I want to go under nine or just because every year is so dependent on the training and staying healthy and what the conditions are. I do believe that I can get faster, and I would say that my goal for the Big Island is to go down and get faster. And so if that's a break in 9 hours or dropping a minute, it all could kind of depends on what happens in the day. But I really don't think that I've put my best day together on that island. I think I've had two really solid races, and so I've been pleased with both of them. But you always walk away, or at least I always do, of the things that could go different and could go better. And so I've got that list, and it's just working towards trying to tick those boxes.
By the sounds of it, the plan's to be around the sport for a long, long time still.
Yeah, I it's hard for me to say how long I want to do it, but I think the lifestyle, and I don't view the training as a sacrifice. I view it as a part of my lifestyle. And so because I've been able to kind of weave it into our everyday life and continue to volunteer and be, coaching my kids' soccer team and baseball team and continuing to work in my career, I could see it certainly being a part for a very long time. Certainly injuries and life changes can derail that, but I'm enjoying it right now. And only 5 years into it, I still feel like a rookie. So I'm still learning.
Well, I get the feeling that you're one of the guys I'm going to have to outlive if I ever want to get to Kona.
maybe.
James, it's been amazing catching up. I look forward to talking about the individual disciplines with you, but we'll save that for another time. Thanks for your time today on the Kona Edge.
All right. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you very much for listening to that edition of the Kona Edge. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget, if you love these podcasts as much as I love doing them, I would really appreciate your support. We definitely appreciate every sort of gesture and sort of bit of help that we do get. And if you'd like to become a patron of the Kona Edge, all you have to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/support and you can pledge your support there on a monthly basis. And literally every single dollar helps. So you can help out with as little or as much as you like. And it all adds up and helps us pay the bills. So if you wouldn't mind checking that out, that's thekonaedge.com/support.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for The Kona Edge.